Good morning, everyone. We started a series a couple weeks ago called In the Garden. And what we're essentially doing is taking a new look at the very earliest story in the Bible at the very beginning of the book of Genesis, from chapters 1 through 3 in Genesis. And the first week, we introduced this topic by saying one thing, mainly, is that we got to remember this isn't meant to be a scientific story, that oftentimes we bring that lens to it and we think this is going to tell us about science and exactly how the world was created and all those kind of things. And it's definitely about how God created the world, but it's written more than 3,000 years ago by people who had a very different worldview and a different understanding of the world, so they're not going to bring the same lens that we bring to it. So we have to keep that in mind. And then last week, we really started reading through the whole story. We read through all of chapter 1 in Genesis, and we read about how God created the world in 6 days, and he made all these different things, and he did all these different amazing things on these days. And we're going to keep reading that story this morning, but I want to remind you of something that I mentioned on the first week, and if you weren't here, this will be helpful, is to remember that this story actually came out of the time of the Exodus. Meaning, we tend to read this story and think, well, I guess Adam and Eve like wrote this down or something like that. But actually, it was first written down, as far as we can tell, as far as scholars know. This story was actually first written down during the time of the events that are told to us in the book of Exodus. It was written during Moses' generation, maybe by Moses himself or one of the leaders during that time. As they looked back and as the Israelites reflected on their history, this was part of that history. So that's the context that these writings come out of that we're reading. And that'll help a little bit later. But before we get to the Bible, I want to talk a little bit about our own lives first. And I want to just pause and think about our own lives and think about a reality that I think shapes our lives. And I want to do that by reading for you some words that a friend of mine wrote in a book a few years ago. And we'll put this on the screen. He wrote this: "There's never enough time. Every night I go to bed with a to-do list longer than is possible for the next day. I balance time between family, friends, clubs, groups, and work. I document it all online with profiles and feeds to make it seem like it's all sorted out, but the truth is it's not sorted out at all. Time is what I want the most, but I use the worst. And if time really is money, then I'm broke. And I think a lot of us are. I was at a coffee shop the other day, and I ran into a friend. I asked him how he was doing, and he said, 'Busy. There's a lot going on this week.' And then he casually returned the question to me, and I said the same: 'I'm pretty busy. Feels like too much is happening right now.' I don't know when it changed. I remember the typical response used to be, 'I'm fine. Everything is fine. We're all fine.' But we're all busy. Trying to say that despite a down economy or a negative news cycle, that at least our lives have a lot going on, that busy is somehow better than being fine. But busy often means I'm not fine at all." I think we can probably all resonate with this, right? In fact, I think if there's one adjective that describes our lives better than any other adjective, it's that word, busy. That we're all really, really busy. We're busy at our jobs. We're busy at home with chores to do, with bills to pay. We're busy with kids. They really keep us busy. We're busy on the weekends. We're busy filling up our schedules. We're busy almost every night and every weekend. We have something going on. We're busy hanging out and doing things with our friends. We pack our lives with so much stuff. And then we have devices that help us track it all and schedule it all and post about it and Instagram about it all. And it's almost like the devices we have, the technology that comes out, is now basically just around this idea of how can we do more in less time. And so it feeds this idea and this lifestyle that means we are simply busy all of the time. Now, maybe you're not. Maybe you're in a unique season right now in life, or maybe you're in some sort of situation where that doesn't characterize you. But I bet if we went around the room and did a survey, I bet like 90 or 95% of us would say, "I'm too busy. I have too much going on in my life." And I think a few things drive this sense of busyness. The first is there's a desire for productivity. We all have this desire for productivity, and our whole our jobs and our culture is telling us we have to produce more, we have to do more, we have to accomplish more, we have to achieve more, we have to make more money, we have to get more things done on our task list. Our kids have to make better grades so they can get into better colleges, and then we have to figure out how we're going to afford that. And it's like everything is pushing us always to produce and do more, and that just makes us busy. That drives another thing that produces this busyness in our life, and it's anxiety. Anxiety. We're worried about whether I'm going to ever make enough money to buy all the things I want, to have the house that I want. Am I going to have a big enough house? Am I going to get that salary? Are my kids going to get into the right college? I want them to get in the right college, so we better do all the right things, and they better be part of all the right sports and all the right extracurricular activities and all those things. And then how am I going to pay for the right college? I better, you know, work harder to get a raise to be able to afford that. And it's like we have this anxiety that's driving everything. We also have an anxiety about missing out on things, right? It's called like FOMO, fear of missing out, right? Because you want to know what everyone else is doing and you don't want to miss out on what anything else is happening because you want to be a part of it and you want to experience everything that Colorado has to offer. And so you're doing something every single night. And you have something scheduled for every single weekend for the next 6 months, and it's a lot of it is driven by this fear or this anxiety that we're going to miss something if we don't do it all. And that gets to the third thing that I think drives our busyness, and it's simply restlessness. We're restless. And maybe this is an American thing. I don't know if it is or not, but it feels like time is wasted if I'm not doing something all the time. And so there's this restless quality. And this became obvious. You heard a bunch of us were down in Guatemala a few weeks ago. And we were doing work with some of our friends down in Guatemala. We were doing some construction work. And over and over and over throughout the week, they kept saying to us, paciencia. Paciencia, which means patience. Paciencia. Because literally, I would look at Domingo. He was this guy we were working with. And I'm like, hey, Domingo, can you show me how to build that form so I can help you do that? And he's like, yeah, I'll show you. I'll show you in a few minutes. And I'm like, okay, well, what can I do while I'm waiting for you to show me? And he'd be like, paciencia. Paciencia. Like, and I'm like, no, I don't have patience. I need to fill the next 3 minutes of time up with, like, I can't just stand here and wait for you to show me because that would be a wasted 3 minutes of time. And it's like, on and up, posse, like Americans, gringos, paciencia. And yet, I think that fuels all of us, right? I mean, there's this sense that if I'm not doing something, if I don't have something on my calendar, if I'm not accomplishing something, if I'm not crossing something off my task list or doing something, then it's just wasted time. That's how we live our lives. We're anxious. We feel like we have to produce or achieve or accomplish all the time. And we're restless. And the problem is, our busyness becomes a burden that we all have to carry. Because we always have to keep up and we always have to do more. And I'm never making enough and I'm never doing enough and I'm never accomplishing enough. And the kids are never doing enough. And we don't have enough going on and we might miss out on something. And so suddenly our lives become so busy that it becomes like this burden that we have to carry. We have to keep up with it all and I have to accomplish it all and I have to do it all and I have to fit it all in. And when I don't feel like I've done enough, I just keep trying to do more and more and more. And it's like this weight or this responsibility that we all carry around. And it's almost as if we become slaves to our schedule or slaves to our phones or slaves to all the things that are going on because we have to keep up with it all. And it's almost oppressive to us. It's like this weight that we're carrying around. And that's a huge problem because we don't know what to do with it. Like if you just say, well, stop being so busy, we're like, well, I can't. I have to do it all. I have to keep doing it all. Now, what's interesting is that more than 3,000 years ago, there was an entire nation of people that were caught up in a similar cycle. That they were caught up in this endless cycle of work, of productivity, of anxiety about the future, of getting things done. A relentless system that said, you've got to keep doing more and you've got to keep producing more in order to make it all work. Now, it wasn't a system that they actually chose. It was a system forced onto them. Because in Egypt, the pharaohs were always worried about the future. They were always anxious about everything that they had to do. Because they had a lifestyle to maintain, right? They had palaces to build. They had lavish buildings to fund. And they would lay awake at night and they would have these nightmares about the future of their country, about whether they would have enough food to feed everyone, about whether they would have enough food to make the whole system work. And so what do you do when you're worried about the future? You realize you have to have a surplus. You have to build more. You have to grow more. You have to raise more. You have to make more. And so the only way to deal with this was to do more. And so they had to plant more food and they had to build bigger barns and build bigger storage houses to hold the surplus so that if any time we got into a situation, if any time we got into a season where we fell on hard times, we would have plenty. There was this anxiety driving everything. And the only way to create a system like that would work is to enslave people. Because the only way that you can produce a whole lot of stuff for very little money is to enslave people. And so that's what they did. They made slaves of the Hebrews. They turned them into slave and cheap labor. And they got caught up in this system of producing to maintain the lifestyle of the pharaohs, to maintain the lifestyle of the leadership, and to produce more so that if we ever got to a future that was going to be difficult for us, we would have plenty of surplus to make it work. And so then it comes along this two guys named Moses and Aaron. And they go to the leaders of this system, this huge pyramid system that they've built, and they basically say, can you let all the slaves go? And the pharaohs look back and they're like, are you crazy? We're not going to do that. In fact, they call them lazy. That's the understanding behind it. The pharaohs, you can look it up in Exodus chapter 5, basically say, no, you're just lazy. You don't want to work. And so we're just going to make you work because you've got to produce. Like the system can't change. In fact, we're going to take your straw away from you and you've got to maintain the same quotas. You've got to keep producing bricks to keep building more storehouses and more pyramids and more lavish palaces for us. It's like the system has to keep going. It's an endless cycle of productivity. And you know the story. God intervenes, right? And he sends these plagues on Egypt and he rescues the people from slavery. And through Moses, he leads them out of this life of slavery and this life in Egypt, and he leads them towards a new hope and a new place and a new future, and it's going to be called the Promised Land. And you know what they're going to find when they get to the Promised Land? This is what they're told they're going to find. This is from the book of Joshua. It says this, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. You're going to find rest there. You'll find rest from your work. You'll find rest from your oppression. You'll find rest from the endless, relentless cycle of productivity that has been forced upon you. You'll find rest from anxiety about worrying about all of these things. You'll find rest there. But when you've been in a slave, when you've been a slave in this system for hundreds of years, that sounds really good, but you don't know how to make that work because that's unlike anything you've ever known. And so when these former slaves get into the wilderness, they come to this place not just a few days later where they start asking questions. In fact, they grab Moses and Aaron, their leaders, and they say, how are we going to make this work? I mean, we know that life was bad in Egypt, but we're kind of missing Egypt. We want to go back there because it was really predictable. And we knew where the food was going to come from. We just worked really hard every day. I know we never had a day off. And I know we had to work late at night. And I know it was like slave labor. But at least we got food. And at least it was predictable. And at least we knew how to manage it. We have no idea how to make this work. Where are we going to get food from? Who's going to feed us here in the wilderness? And you know what Moses says? He looks back at them. And he says, there's going to be a new system in place. Here's how you're going to get fed. Here's what's going to happen. I want you to go out, and every day God is going to provide for you. I know that's very different than what you received in the past. You had to work really hard for your food, but God is going to provide for you. And the way he's going to provide is he's going to send this white stuff, like snow, but it's manna instead. And he's going to send this stuff, and it's going to be like bread. It's going to be like food. It's going to come down on the ground, and then there's going to be quail on the ground that you can take, and that's going to be your meat. So he's going to give you this bread, and he's going to give you this meat, and I want you to go out and collect it every single day. but it's going to be very different. I don't want you to collect any surplus. I want you to just collect enough for what you need for that day. Because God just wants to give you what you need for that day. You don't have to worry about the future. You don't have to think about those things. You don't have to be anxious about where you're going to get things in the future. Just trust in God every day. So go out and collect what you need for that day. And you're going to do this every single day. You can't collect more than you actually need for that day. Except for on the sixth day. You're going to do this for 6 days. And on the sixth day, I do want you to collect twice as much as what you need. Because on the seventh day, you're going to take that day entirely off. I don't want you to go out and collect anything. It's going to be like one day a week, you're really going to be tested in your faith and in your trust in God. And he's going to let you know that you don't have to worry about anything. So he'll give you twice as much as what you need on day six. You're going to go out and collect it. And on day seven, you don't have to do any work at all. You're going to stop from all of your collecting and all of your work. And you're just going to trust in God's provision. And I know it's going to be strange. This is totally different than the system you're used to. You're used to working every single minute, every single day, all the time. You're used to earning everything you need. You're used to worrying about the future. You're used to wondering where all the things are going to come from. And so you're going to have to. But that's Pharaoh's system. God has a totally different system. And so the people give it a try. And they start collecting their food this way. They don't really know why. Like, why are we doing the sixth day, seventh day thing? Like, we don't really understand where that comes from. Because in all of their history, all they had ever known was you just work from sun up to sundown every single day. And you try to get by. But God is saying, I don't want you to do that anymore. It's a totally new system. God makes it clear a couple of weeks later, because they try this for a couple of weeks, and then they come to this mountain, it's called Mount Sinai, and at the foot of Mount Sinai, God says, okay, I'm going to give you all the rules for this system. I'm going to tell you how this system is going to be set up, and how this system is going to be so different from the system you used to be in. And so he speaks to Moses, and he gives him these rules, and then he gives him all these laws, and all these ways they're going to govern their society. And number one rule is this: I am the Lord your God. And I brought you out of slavery in Egypt. And you'll have no other gods before me. In other words, you used to worship a different god. Pharaoh was your god. And you lived in his system and under his rule. But now you're in my system and under my rule. And my kingdom is very different from Pharaoh's kingdom. And you can't have it both ways. You can't serve both gods. You can only serve one god. So you're going to have to choose. You can just serve me. You can't have any other gods. Jesus would one day say something similar. He would say, you can't serve two masters. You can only have one master. And so that's what's happening right here in Exodus. You can only serve one God. I rescued you from that God, from that system, and from that kingdom. Now you're in my system, and it's going to be totally different. So then he gives them these other rules, and there's 10 rules. We call them the 10 commandments. And we're not going to read through all of them today, but there's one that I do want to read through. Because it's the one commandment, it's the one rule out of all of them that God spends more time than any other rules. God spills more ink on this one, or at least Moses does in writing it down, than any of the others. It's the one where God instructs them how they're going to live in a system that's going to be totally different than the system they used to live in. It's rule number 4, and here's what it says. This is from Exodus 20. Remember the stopping day by keeping it holy. Now there's a Hebrew word there that I've translated into English into the bracketed word, and it's the word Shabbat. And it just means to stop or to cease. And so what this really means is remember the stopping day or the ceasing day by keeping it holy. And the word holy sounds super religious, but that just means set apart or unique or distinct or sacred. That there's going to be something sacred or different or set apart about the stopping day. The stopping day is going to be different than all the other days. Okay, so what's the stopping day, Moses? Glad you asked. I'll tell you. Next verse. He says, 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is a stopping to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. So here Moses is saying, this is the thing we've been doing the last couple of, like, remember when you told me about where we're going to get our food, and I told you we're going to try this new system, where 6 days we're going to go collect it, and on the seventh day we're not going to collect it because we're going to trust God. That's the system that I was talking about. We work for 6 days, but on the seventh day we stop working. We fully trust in God's provision on the seventh day. And this isn't just a personal thing, he says here. This isn't just something that you should do. This is something the whole community should do. This is something that everyone you know should do. This is something that the whole nation should do. This is a systematic thing. This is a new system of new habits and new patterns that's totally unlike the habits and patterns that you and your community used to live in. And so this isn't about just one or two people in the community taking the seventh day off. This isn't just about the rich people taking the seventh day off. This isn't just about some people at the top of the pyramid taking that day off, but everyone else at the bottom of the pyramid, the poor people, the immigrants, like the blue collar, they still have to work on this day. Because God would tell them later, remember, that used to be you. You are the immigrants in Egypt. You are the poor people. You are the ones at the bottom of the system. In that system, that was you, and I delivered you from that. I rescued you from that. That was Pharaoh's system. That was his kingdom. This is going to be a different system and a different kingdom. Everyone is going to work for 6 days, and then on the seventh day, they're going to stop working. At which point, the people might say, okay, Moses, where does this come from? I mean, why are we doing it this way? Like, what is this? This is a totally different system. We've never heard of it. Where does this come from? Moses tells us in the next verse. For in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the stopping day, and he made it holy. You see, this pattern of life, this rhythm of time, this understanding or this balance between work and rest, it actually goes back to the very beginning. And you can imagine Moses at this point going, don't you know the story? And we've told some of these stories all along. And in fact, I'm working on a book. I'm writing them down to make sure that we don't forget this story. It's really, really important. It's like the history of our people. And so I'm actually working on it right now. So let me kind of run it by you just to make sure we all know it, to make sure we can remember it and continue to tell people why we do the things we do. And it's almost as if Moses stops right there and he says, just remember. Remember what happened in the beginning. In the beginning, God created the world. And he created everything in the world. And he did it in 6 days. He created the plants, and he created the trees, and he created the seas, and he created the land, and the skies, and the weather systems, and the sun, and the moon, and the stars, and all the fish, and all the shrimp, and all the birds, and all the swallows, and all the butterflies, and the porcupines, and the chipmunks. Like, he created all of it. And then he created us. He created humans as well. And then he invited us to be a part of what he's doing, and he handed over rule of everything that we see to us. Remember, he did that, and you can imagine Moses going through the whole story. Here's what he did on Sunday. Here's what he did on Monday, and then Tuesday, and then Wednesday, and then Thursday, and then Friday. And he gets to that point, and he says, but you know what happened on Saturday? Here's what happened on Saturday. And he pulls out what he's writing, and he reads this to them. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. And so on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. And then God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. You see, the reason we stop working on the seventh day is because God stopped working on the seventh day. The reason we rest on the seventh day is because God rested on the seventh day. And God doesn't just do this as an example to us. It's not like God wanted to keep working and there's a whole lot of stuff to do, but he knew like one day these people are going to become workaholics. And so I better set a good example. So I'm just going to take tomorrow off so that they'll look back and be like, God took it off, so we should take it off. Like, that's not what happened. You see, God stopped and rested because there's actually something good about stopping and resting. That there's something good about saying, I don't need to do any more work this week. That in God's economy, unrelenting productivity is not the goal. Anxiety about never having done enough is not the goal. And let's be honest, if anyone could have been anxious, it would have been God, right? I mean, if anyone could have stopped on Friday afternoon and started asking, like, okay, have I done enough this week to make this a great world? Like, did I separate the land and the seas enough? Did I make the weather systems good enough? We've got rain and sun and snow and clouds. Maybe there's something different I should add to the mix. Like, did I create cool enough animals? Should I create more? Did I make it really clear to the people what their role is and what their goal is and what they should do? I should probably make it more clear. Like, if anyone could have been anxious about the work that he had done, it would have been God. But he doesn't do that. He stops on the seventh day and he looks back. And it's almost as if he stops and he pauses and he rests, and it allows him to look back and say, man, it's all good. Like, it's working really well. It's all functioning the way I intended it to function. And it's not perfect. I mean, if perfect means that I could have done more, it's not perfect, right? I mean, God could have worked more days, couldn't he? And if perfect means that I have ensured that nothing can go wrong, then it's not perfect. Because in fact, the kind of work that God does actually ends up handing over responsibility for the rest of the creative process to us, which opens the door that something might actually go wrong. But God's okay with that. He must be. That's what he did, right? Because endless work to create a perfect product or a perfect creation was not the goal. There's a very different goal behind what God was doing. Now, we'll get to that in a second, but I want to stop at this point in the story and challenge you. If your life is characterized by busyness, by endless productivity, by trying to get more done in less time than you have, if your life is characterized by an anxiety about the future, about a fear of missing out on things, and so you're doing more things, about a fear of not having enough money or not getting into the right schools or not making the right grades or not getting the raise that you should if you don't work harder at work, if your life is characterized by that kind of busyness and that kind of relentless restlessness, you are living in Pharaoh's system, not God's. You're living in Pharaoh's kingdom. Not God's. You're driven by Pharaoh's values, not God's. And what will eventually happen is you will become, if you don't already feel, you will become enslaved by that system. You'll feel like you're a slave to your calendar or a slave to your phone, and you'll feel like it's this burden that you're carrying around, and you don't know how to let go of it because you got to keep just doing more and trying more, and it'll just feel like this heavy weight that you're carrying. And here's how to let go of that, and here's how to enter into God's system, because God's system and his kingdom is very different from that one. The way to do it is to start practicing a Sabbath day. That's what Moses says to the people. The word Sabbath was the word stopping. We now just say the word. It's the Hebrew word Shabbat. We just call it the Sabbath day, but it just means the stopping day. And so it starts with taking a day every single week in our lives and stopping our work and simply resting. A whole day where you stop being productive in all the ways that you're normally productive. A whole day where you do nothing related to your job, related to your career, where you do nothing that feels like work to you. And that's going to be different for all of us. But it's probably a day where you disconnect from things that are associated with work, where you disconnect with things that are associated with productivity and producing and doing more. Maybe it's a day where you disconnect from things that are associated with just like mindless consumption, or a day where you don't check email, or a day where you don't even watch TV, because when you watch TV, you're going to see advertisements that keep telling you, you need to have a better car, and you need to get a better job, and you need to live in a bigger house, and you need to have the latest iPhone. And it's like all of that continues to feed this anxiety and this productivity and this restlessness that we all feel. And so what if you took a day where you set all that aside and you stopped doing that? You even stopped doing maybe house chores. You stopped planning for the future. You stopped worrying about the future on that day. You didn't do anything on that day that feeds the anxiety that you haven't done enough or you don't have enough. It's just a day where you rest from all of that. Maybe that means taking a nap. I don't know. Maybe it means going on a hike. Maybe it means having a picnic. Maybe it means enjoying a hobby that's restful for you. Maybe it means just hanging out with some friends on that day. Rest and restoration are going to look very different for every single person in the room, but let's not get caught up in the particulars here. We can talk about the particulars some other place, but here's the question I want to ask you. Are you taking that kind of day? Are you actually experiencing a Sabbath day like that, that is restful and restorative? One day every week. And if you're not, I want to challenge you to do it. I want you to do it this week. I want you to plan for it, and you're going to have to plan for it. I want you to plan for taking an entire day, 24 hours. Don't do this like, well, I'll start with 2 hours thing. Like, just, I mean, you need to do the whole thing. Like, 24 hours, day of rest. And you might look back and say, well, oh, that's nice, but I just can't do it this week. Like, I've got a lot. Like, if you knew what I had going on at work right now, or if you knew what was going on, I've just got too much planned. And I would say, that's why you need it more than anyone else. And it's like the alcoholic looking back and be like, well, I don't really want to give it up because I like it so much. And you're like, point made. You need to give it up. Like, you're addicted to this. You more than anyone else. If you're so busy that you can't even think of how I would take a whole day off, kind of says you really need to figure out how to do this. So what would it look like if you just took a whole Sabbath day this week and then you begin to plan, how can I start doing this every single week? Now, I want to tease out one other concept related to this passage and this idea and this story that I think is important, because this isn't just about finding a good work rest balance. That's part of it. That's really helpful. That's the place to start. And that can be really hard. I mean, thinking about if you've never done that or you don't have space for that in your life, thinking about how to carve off an entire day where you don't do work or you don't check your email and you don't do, like, that might be one of the hardest things you do. But the goal is not just one day of rest. That's not the goal. God didn't just create us for one day of rest a week. God created us for a life of restfulness. He wants us to experience restfulness in everything we do. You see, God wants us to live our lives with a sense of restfulness where even our work feels restful, because you're working with God. You're doing the things he's called you to do. You're working in his strength, not in your own strength. You're working in relationship with him, not apart from him. You're working within his kingdom to further his purposes for his creation. And when you're working in that way, all of your work feels purposeful and intentional. And it might wear you out physically, but spiritually and emotionally, it's fulfilling and it's restful. And this isn't about working for a church. And this isn't about ministry. You can do that as a teacher, as an accountant, as a stay-at-home parent. You can do that in almost any career. And this isn't even just about your career or your job. It's about so much more. It's about how we take care of our homes and our yards and our kids and all of the things we do in life. And what would it look like for everything we do in life to be characterized by the sense of restfulness? And when you do that, it's like you can look back with God when you do take a Sabbath and you can enjoy it. You can look back on what you've done that week and you can say, this is good. It means the Sabbath day doesn't just become a day where you crash because you're exhausted, because you've been working so hard out of your own strength and you just need to crash to recharge. It becomes a day where, like God, you can actually just look back and say, wow, this is good. God, this is good. What I'm doing right now and what you've called me to do and why I'm doing it with you in my life and I'm trusting on you and your provision, this is good. This all-encompassing idea of restfulness, this is the promised land. It's what the promised land was all about. It's why God said, when you come into the promised land, you'll experience rest. Now, when they came into the promised land, does that mean they didn't do any more work? No. Does that mean, like, don't grow any more food? You don't have to take care of the kids anymore? There's no more house chores? When the wagon breaks, you don't have to fix it? Like, I mean, no. There's still plenty of work to do in the promised land. But it's working with God. It's working from this state that ancient Hebrews often called shalom. A state of well-being, of peace, a state of where everything is right because I'm within his purposes and I'm doing what he's called me to. And I can connect my work as an accountant and taking care of my kids and the gardening we do in our front. I can connect all of that to the greater purposes God has to make this a flourishing world where he reigns and he rules and I'm bringing his reign and his rule to every part of this world. It's what Jesus meant when he said this to his disciples. This is from the book of Matthew. He said, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. That means all of you who have been working in your own strength, according to your own schedule in Pharaoh's system. You're relentlessly busy trying to produce more and do more, and that's burdened you and you're weary. Come to me. If that's you, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. That's what he's talking about here. Not rest for your muscles. Like, that's good. You need to find that too. But there's like a deep down, like, restlessness in our souls. You need to find rest there. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Come to me and I'll give you rest. And that doesn't mean you'll never do any more work. In fact, the word yoke was something that was put on the neck of an ox when they're plowing a field. They're doing work. But what God is saying is the work in my kingdom and under my rule, it's restful work. My yoke is light. My burden is easy. It won't feel like you're carrying something around because you're doing it in relationship with me. It's what the writer of Hebrews meant when he said this. This is the last verse I want to read. He said, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. There remains. It's almost as if he's looking at you and me today and he says, you're restless. You're busy. Your schedules are packed. You're doing so much. There's still a promised land. There's still a true Sabbath rest that's waiting for you and you haven't found it yet. And he says, let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest. So what do you need to do today to enter that rest? Well, I think it's what starts with what I mentioned before. It starts with taking a Sabbath every week. Because that's going to challenge every single week, every 7 days. It's going to challenge, it's going to serve as a powerful reminder that there are moments and times where we stop and we don't have to produce and we don't have to be anxious about the future and we have to just trust in God that he'll provide. And it's going to push against the culture because the culture's telling you, you have to have everything on. You have to be available to everyone at all times. You have to do everything or else you're going to miss out. It's going to be hard, but taking a Sabbath every week will begin to push against this idea in our minds. The problem for us is that some of us are still searching for that elusive rest in our souls. And maybe you're here today and Sabbath is the place to start, but maybe you need to come brutally honest to God. And maybe you just need to come to Jesus this morning. Like literally just come to him and say, I got to confess, I've been serving a different master. I've been living in Pharaoh's system. I mean, you know it. You've been watching. You see my schedule. You see what I've been doing, but I'm just acknowledging it to you. I have been living in that system and in that way of life. I've been living in a different kingdom, and I don't want to do that anymore. It is eating away at my soul. It's killing me. It's destroying our family. It's destroying my life. It's just so hard. I feel like I have to maintain it and carry it all the time, and I don't want to carry it anymore. And maybe you just need to have that conversation with Jesus this morning where you go to him and you say, I got to start with confessing and ask for your forgiveness. And then I just need you to give me the courage to make some radical changes in my life. And you can't do that on your own. That's why you have to come to Jesus first and ask him to give you that courage and give you that ability. Now, what if we all did that? What if we all did that this morning? What if we just came to him and said, we're too busy. We've been serving a different master. We don't want to do that anymore. God, renew us. Give us a new sense of what we can do when we work with you in your kingdom and when we experience your rest, not only one day a week, but all the time. What do you think God would do if we came to him with open hands, open lives, open schedules, and open hearts, ready to hear from him? I think that's what he wants from us today. Let me pray. Father God, we thank you for giving us this story from Genesis. And God, we're grateful that you don't want us to toil. You don't want us to be oppressed or burdened by our busyness, by endless productivity, by all those things, God. But that you want to, just like you liberated the people from Egypt, you want to liberate us from that as well. God, we know that's scary, and we know that can be hard, and we know that we don't even know how to do that oftentimes. And so I pray this morning that you would give us wisdom as we think about that, and you would give us ideas, and you would give us friends and a community to support us in those efforts, that we would support one another, that our community would be characterized, and our friendships and our relationships and our families would be characterized by restfulness. We don't know how to do that, God, but give us the courage to pursue that and help us to find that in you. I pray this in your name. Amen.